Monday.
It's March 9th.
And the word of the day is kittle pitchering, which means preventing someone from telling a long and boring story by interrupting them. Used in a sentence, the etymology of kittle pitchering.
I'm Mike Zach.
I'm Eli Bosnick. I'm Eli Bosnick.
Wow. Should have seen that coming. I'm Heath Enright. And broadcasting delayed from America's far center and across the pond, we are the Skeptocrats.
On this week's episode, the news plays our least favorite repeats of the 90s.
Reform UK will tell us that voting for any party other than them is cheating.
And Christy Noem gets old yellered, but she might need to get shot by a puppy if she wanders back.
But first, the rest of the intro music.
Joining me for headlines tonight are my fellow skeptic rats, Michael Marshall and Eli Bosnick. Gentlemen, winter's almost over, so you looking forward to the spring of our discontent?
Yeah. Hey, good job locking the guy who's interested in young princes in the tower this time as opposed to the other way around. He nailed it.
I'm confused, though. I thought vulgarity for charity was your discontent.
Okay, that's excellent. Yeah, we've got discontent and discontent all seasons. It's just, it's a big cycle. We stay discontent and discontent. In our lead story tonight, we've always been at war with Iran and Venezuela and East Asia. And I don't know, maybe some people in Ecuador now too, something with that. Lots of flying around the world and blowing stuff up. Despite Donald Trump running on the platform of not doing, well, exactly this, there's, of course, the Epstein files.
The what now? Yeah, never heard of it. No idea.
And also a looming midterm election where we might take at least the House and then we can investigate crimes. That'd be great. And, of course, Netanyahu tricks Donald Trump like Bugs Bunny every few weeks. So there's that. And also so much bribing. Countries in the region that are traditional rivals with Iran, like Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Oman, Qatar, they recently spent billions of dollars that we know of, plus a gently used private jet, on bribing the Trump family directly. And probably billions more that we don't know about in meme coins and shirtless, oiled up Donald NFTs, whatever. A lot of bribing.
Yeah, it is. It's just genuinely insane that at the height of the bombing, the White House just quietly added a load of documents to the Epstein files that they'd accidentally omitted before, which happened to be all about how Trump was accused of raping teenage girls. And even we have to breeze past that because of the bombing that he's doing. We know he's done that, and we still have to breeze past it to get to the bombing.
Well, as long as those files evaporate like a noontime puddle, he'll never have to worry about them again. You know what they say? Once on the internet, gone forever.
We're gonna fucking circle back to that a bunch, very likely. Well, some combination of all the stuff I just mentioned led to Trump teaming up with Bibi Netanyahu for a war against Iran. Israel's military is calling this Operation Roaring Lion, and the U.S. military is calling it Operation Epic Fury, because we're all fucking 8-year-olds in a treehouse right now.
Ooh, I hope not. A lot of them getting bombed lately. He's gotta be careful.
Okay, but why are all these operations named like the herbal virility supplements you find at a vending machine at the bathrooms of a really sketchy nightclub?
Because the same group of people are buying both, Marsh. It is, they know their customers.
Demo, that's the marketing demo right there. So, according to the Trump administration, the reason for the war, well, you know what? It tends to move around, even according to them. One of the big reasons they like to mention is preventing Iran from developing nuclear weapons. Well, we actually had a whole thing for that, a diplomatic agreement worked out in 2015 with Iran, China, Russia, the UK, and the EU. It was called the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA. And it lifted economic sanctions on Iran in exchange for cooperation and inspection of nuclear facilities. But in 2018, Trump was mad that Barack Hussein Obama had done a thing that was, you know, maybe working. So Trump pulled out of the JCPOA. And of course, Iran started producing more nuclear material again, because that's how agreements work when they get broken by one side.
Yeah, well, nothing puts people in a state of mind for compromise better than a war. So I think we're going to get a great deal out of this, everybody. It's going to go...
Yeah, could be the art of the deal at play. So we started worrying about Iran's nuclear program again. Okay. But luckily we did Operation Midnight Hammer last year.
Okay. I rest my case.
Not after Midnight Hammer, you don't, Marsh. Let me tell you that.
Well, we totally obliterated Iran's nuclear program, asterisk. Also, according to Special Envoy Steve Witkoff, Iran was days, possibly hours away from having a nuclear arsenal when we started Epic Fury, also asterisk. Seems like it couldn't be both of those things. Many would say it was decidedly neither of those analyses. Regardless, our latest plan is spending about $900 million a day on this new war. And here's our weird gambit. We'll stop spending insane amounts of our money, like $900 million a day, if Iran agrees to pretty much the same stuff as was already in the JCPOA. But it looks like we're also adding a few extra demands that make it way harder for Iran to accept, and therefore the war can keep going if we feel like it. And that tracks, considering another stated goal for the Trump administration is regime change. And yes, okay, the current regime in Iran, clearly bad. And yes, admittedly, the United States has been amazing at smooth, low-cost, effective regime change in the Middle East over the years. That's our wheelhouse. But we don't seem to have any cogent plan for what the new regime would look like. At the moment, it seems like our plan was bombs of epic fury and then insane chaos. Well, you know, for mostly other people, not us. And eventually those people figure it out with a new government and maybe we bomb again if we don't like the outcome. That seems to be our genuine plan.
Yeah, it really does. Like America using bombs for Middle East regime change, like the way that the rest of us use the skip button when the playlist's on shuffle. Like, okay, a couple more times. Like, the next one will be a banger, I swear.
It's also weird watching the right pretend that this is a tricky one for us on the left. Like wars can still be illegal if they're against bad guys. That's not the stumper they were hoping it would be.
Yeah,
yeah, we're supposed to be stumped because we also don't like the regime of Iran.
So
right now,
you love Ayatollah Khomeini? No,
okay,
that's not
no
what I was
no.
upset about.
Okay, so the question is, what's next? Now, normally, I would have said, we as a company place a large bet on the detonation of a nuclear device sometime soon.
Yeah.
Or I guess we could bet against that, depending on what insider information we could rustle up from our different signal chats that we all have with possibly people in the administration. But sadly, proposition gambling about nuclear tragedy is no longer welcome at the online prop betting site Polymarket. What, you might ask? They used to have that? Great question, and they sure the fuck did. They've had betting on nuclear detonation as a gamble you could do there since 2023. And as of less than a week ago, they had a page that said nuclear weapon detonation by ? And people would bet yes or no for listed time horizons. In this case, before March 31st was an option they were giving there. Also, before June 30th and before the end of 2026. Well, Polymarket finally took down that one bet last week.
Okay, but I've started a market on when they'll put it back up, if anyone wants in on the action.
Ooh, yeah.
So, they probably would allow that.
Yeah.
So it's a meta gamble. You have to be allowed to gamble about gambling. That's great. That's not about death. It's about gambling of gambling. It's meta gambling. So to be clear, the nuclear detonation bet was not taken down because of Polymarket suddenly discovering, you know, the concept of ethics. It's clearly about public opinion and a backlash affecting their potential bottom line. And their main competitor, Kalshi, is going through the same thing with their weird prop betting website. Kalshi had active bets about things like Maduro getting ousted in Venezuela. And that one had some giant wagers with incredible last-minute timing that made people wonder if maybe there should not be, you know, a company allowing financial incentives for corrupt government officials and military leaders to exact death and destruction around the world.
Yeah, especially when, as like you've already mentioned, there are so many better ways for corrupt government officials to make money here. This isn't
exactly
a good way to do it.
It's right. About using the proper channels.
Yeah.
I love that this company is just like, sorry, everyone, We wandered by Pete Hegseth in a hallway, and he was mumbling, "I can beat the spread," while he looked at his phone. So we're going to pause our terrible thing that should have never existed.
See how the fucking spread goes. Genuinely, Marsh, just circling back to what you said, I bet these sites like Kalshi and Polymarket are making the argument that, like, okay, well, you know, if you take over a country and you don't plunder their oil, you just make your money on Kalshi or Polymarket by doing a bet about it. That's good for the world in comparison.
Yeah, that's ethical at that point. Yeah, completely.
That's a net positive. I wouldn't be surprised if their lawyers are thinking about that. Anyway, so Kalshi also had an active betting market for the ousting of the supreme leader of Iran. And Ayatollah Khamenei was killed by a missile strike last week. So Kalshi had to rethink their site a little bit. Again, just like Polymarket, it wasn't ethics. It was the big headache for Kalshi of figuring out the technicalities of that bet in countries where gambling isn't allowed to directly relate to somebody's death.
Yeah, sure. And also, like, Muslims aren't allowed to gamble, and it just feels mean that Iranians can't get something out of all of this.
So they're also spreading important capitalistic values around the world.
Hearts and minds.
So yeah, seriously, yeah, changing those hearts and minds. So Kalshi, they actually had to unwind the bets for places that you're not allowed to win money because of a person's death. And they had to figure out the value of that wager kind of as like a futures contract right before the death of the Ayatollah. But obviously that doesn't satisfy anyone who wasn't, you know, cheating with insider information. They just like nailed it on the timing by chance. That the value of that bet right before they won it is nothing compared to what they should have won. That market, by the way, that bet had about $54 million in total volume on Chelsea.
Okay, Jesus. Everybody, that was admittedly in poor taste, but our new civilian death toll scratch-offs are a lot more subdued. They're black, the background's black, the writing on them is a mournful purple.
God, a lot of bad stuff going on. Don't worry, you could still make some insane bets at those places. If that's what you were worried about just now. So you're sad about the world, but you're like, I want to make weird, exotic bets. You could still do some of that. Just not the exact one about a nuclear detonation on Polymarket. But you can always find some exotic parlays, which are a series of bets that all have to come true together in order to win your overall gamble. You could bet on, for example, the winner of the NCAA tournament and the certain coin flip that might happen during one of those games, and you could bet that Trump is going to pardon Diddy, and you could bet that Taylor Swift is going to break up with Travis, and he'll start an angry men's rights retaliation podcast, and you could bet on the name of that shitty podcast in the hypothetical world. And if all that were to happen, you'd win an insanely large parlay bet with big odds on your small gamble. But the biggest parlay category on those sites right now seems to be related to the fucking nuclear detonation bet that they took down from Polymarket. Yeah, there's a bet called, it's on the good side. There's a bet called Nothing Ever Happens, based on the meme, Nothing Ever Happens. And if you take the bet for, say, the month of March, you're betting on a parlay of several different terrible things not happening in March, including a bunch of major war events and major economic crash events that could happen. Really doesn't feel like these betting sites are a good idea, right? It seems like there's just so many problems with this.
Yeah, this is an issue. Yeah. And in Mountbatten Down the Hatches news.
Fantastic.
I need to start this week with an apology. And you know, yes, it is what you're thinking. It's an apology about the Epstein files.
Oh, man, rough. I knew he was softening us up with that first appearance. You're the newest drop as a customer, aren't you?
Did we put any sound effects in for this? I don't think we do on the soundboard. Nothing's appropriate.
I'm ready for it to be my fault this time, though, which is nice. The last time I was not prepared, but this time.
So, okay, here's the thing. Here is the thing. The last time, I was on the show, I talked about how the only people seeing any consequences from their relationship with Jeffrey Epstein were Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, a.k.a. the monarchist formerly known as Prince, a.k.a. the grand old, a.k.a. the grand old Duke of York. There was him. And then also the Labour peer and former ambassador to the US, Peter Mandelson. And I said those consequences had amounted to essentially losing their barely existent jobs and facing some heavy public humiliation from the comfort of their mansions.
I believe the official verdict at the time was naughty, naughty.
Yeah, exactly. Well, here's my apology. It turns out, I'm sorry, I was completely wrong, because in the month since we aired that story, Andy and Mandy have both been arrested as part of an investigation into suspicion of misconduct in public office.
Okay, the US, we wanted to give you, the UK, a head start on doing some prosecutions. We're doing it too. We're going to give you a couple chances first, and then we're going to go, I promise.
Eventually, yeah, you're getting to it completely, yeah. So the first to go was Andrew. He was arrested on February 19th, which, as many people were quick to point out, was also his 66th birthday, fully arrested on his birthday. Despite the fact that it was his birthday, it was actually the rest of us who got the best possible present in the shape of an amazing photo that a reporter at Reuters was able to snap as Andrew was being smuggled out in a Range Rover after his 11-hour stay in a police holding cell. It's an amazing picture.
This is an amazing photo of him in just complete shock. Yeah. Surprise in the backseat. Anne actually sent me this photo right after this happened, and her caption was, "When you're trying to use your phone as a flashlight and accidentally open the front camera."
Yeah. Yes.
I was like, wow, that's very accurate. 100%.
100% accurate. Do you think there was anybody in the Scotland Yard who was like, surely not on his birthday? And they were like, yeah, Rick, on his birthday.
Well, it's either that or when he gets checked in, they've got to ask him his date of birth when you're sort of like booking someone. And I'd love to be the person behind the desk at that point to be like, oh, today is it? Oh, well, happy birthday. I'm not going to say Your Majesty, not anymore. Can I take you this way into a very small room? Yeah, amazing.
Please hand me your shoelaces. Happy birthday, though.
So this arrest, it related to the charge of misconduct in a public office, with allegations that he shared with Jeffrey Epstein privileged business information that Andrew had gathered in his role as a trade envoy for the UK government between 2001 and 2011. And that actually included investment opportunities in gold and uranium from Afghanistan that he was sending to Epstein. And yeah, for those who don't realise, which may actually include the former Duke of York, when you're the trade envoy to a government, you have a duty to keep all of that information confidential.
Yeah, yeah. You also have a duty to not fuck any children. That's important.
You've got that one as well.
Trade envoys, lots of other jobs. Yeah.
Yeah, most jobs, actually, yeah. It's not often in the rules, but it's kind of an unspoken rule that we kind of all just go by.
Let's speak it for everybody, just to be sure.
4 days after Andrew, Peter Mandelson was also arrested for the same charge of misconduct in a public office, again for sharing sensitive government information with Jeffrey Epstein. And that included when Mandelson was part of Gordon Brown's Labour government and he forwarded Epstein information about Gordon Brown's plans to sell assets, which gave Epstein a heads up that could be used to significantly profit when the policy was actually announced. And it also included policies around bankers' bonuses. And Mandelson told Epstein about the bailout package for the euro in 2010, the day before it was actually announced as taking place.
Fuck? Giant insider trading.
Yeah. Right,
Marsh, I know how glass the house I'm standing in as I throw this stone is, but I'm not loving that neither of these sets of charges are addressing the pedophile island aspect. It feels like a paperwork issue right now. I feel like...
Yeah, fair. I mean, I get it. It's a bit like arresting Andrew for not having paid VAT on the child sex slave that he purchased. Like,
right,
there's some tariffs.
Exactly.
To,
it's just that
to
one
still pay.
Form.
Still, both Andy and Mandy, they've had their homes and their properties searched. They've had documents seized. So this definitely isn't done yet. We've even had politicians talking about the release of the Mandelson files, which will be the documents that we get, actually publishing them for people to see. So this is going to carry on. The problem is successfully prosecuting a charge of misconduct in a public office, that can be quite tricky because you've got to prove that they were acting as a public officer, that they were guilty of willful misconduct to the point that it abused the public's trust, and that they had no reasonable excuse or justification. But when you have a senior member of the government sending privileged policy information to a billionaire paedophile in order to make money at the expense of the UK taxpayer, and then you have them discussing that in a "here's a fun way to make money at the expense of the British taxpayer, lol" email, you gotta say it's gonna look bad for Mandelson.
Okay, yeah, that seems like they could check all the boxes. I'm glad we're finally prosecuting a couple of these people, but the moment it's not fucking boomers writing emails in triplicate, subject line, "in re crimes we crime together," it's gonna get way harder to catch these criminals.
Yeah, it really is. So yeah, this definitely isn't over for either of these two men. But even in the short term, there have been even more public humiliations, for Andrew in particular. So for one, we learned that Andrew was stripped of even more of his honours and titles. That the ones he's lost now include Prince, Duke of York, Royal Knight Companion of the Order of the Garter, Royal Highness, Vice Admiral of the Royal Navy, and the Earl of Inverness. These are all titles he held and no longer holds. That said, he does have one other title that we learned about recently, and it came courtesy of Australian news show 60 Minutes. They interviewed one former bodyguard of Andrew's who explained that his official designated codename was Purple 41, but behind the scenes, everyone in his security staff just referred to him as the cunt.
Okay.
Phenomenal.
Just take a moment and imagine living in that castle and earning the title of the cunt. That's honestly impressive.
It really is. So, yeah, congratulations, Andrew. You found a title that we're all more than happy for you to keep. Happy birthday.
And in AIII news, I think we can all agree that one of the most dreaded interactions that everyday Americans deal with on a daily basis all over our fine nation is a visit to the DMV. From the confusing lines to the endless forms to the watching a guy get in a screaming fight with the staff about holding his Raggedy Ann doll in his license photo, a thing that actually happened to me that I think about 3 or 4 times a day minimum, it's a universally unpleasant experience.
Okay, so here's the thing. Do you know when I last had to renew my driver's license? No, you don't, and neither do I. Like, it's a once-in-a-decade thing here, I think, maybe even slightly longer than that. And the way you do it is you mail them a new photo with proof of address, and that's it. I think in totality in my life, so I've maybe spent 20 minutes renewing my driver's license. Your country is so fucking weird about this.
But how do you get yelled at about which line you're in?
I don't understand. It doesn't even make sense.
But in the last few years, many of these agencies have begun to offer these services over the phone and online, shortening lines and making the whole process easier. That said, these shortcuts don't always work out. For example, we learned this week that for the last couple of months, when callers to the Department of Licensing for the state of Washington pressed 2 for Spanish, they were greeted by an AI voice speaking English with a heavy Spanish accent.
Come on. God damn it. All right, well, hot take. In fairness to artificial intelligence, that's exactly what the white guy meant when he told the bot, come on, do the accent. You know what I mean, do the accent. Like, he clearly meant the white restaurant manager who says, you know, everything the same, still in English, except now with the word mucho when he's talking to a tan-looking employee.
Yes, exactly, like, yeah.
Gonna bust mucho tables over there.
Yeah. So
thanks, man.
This little bug was discovered by TikToker Maya Edwards after her Spanish-speaking husband called the number. After learning that pressing 2 for Spanish consistently connected her to senior pets, Edwards posted a video of her interaction with the number in a TikTok that quickly reached 2 million views.
Okay, but did he try pressing DOS instead of pressing 2? Because that might have fixed it.
That would have done it, yeah. The Washington Department of Licensing said Friday in a statement that it fixed the glitch after determining it was caused by Department of Licensing staff. It noted that the self-service option includes 10 languages and runs on a newer AI-driven technology, saying, quote, DOL apologizes for the error and to its customers for any inconvenience, end quote.
No, they don't. But also, you know, press 9 for lo siento.
Yep. Okay, so here's the crazy part. As of writing this story, I'm not sure if it's true when you're hearing this, calling that number and pressing 2 for Spanish still results in an English-speaking voice with a Spanish accent.
Come on.
But the Department of License has added a message in English before the connection, acknowledging that some of the translation services are not functioning properly.
Oh my God, that's amazing. So for giving you help in a language you don't understand, here is an apology in a language you still don't understand.
Yeah. So when AP reporters called the number, they were connected to the voice, which apparently only used Spanish words occasionally, and told the reporters, final quote here, your estimated wait time is less than trace minutes.
No. Oh, my God. That's even stupider than the thing I wrote as a joke.
Yep.
That's ridiculous.
Indeed it is.
Spanish for the niño. Like, we actually did that sketch in real life. My God. And in fire and ice news, we fired the lady who shot a puppy with a gun, and we hired a guy named Mark Wayne. One word. Perhaps the most American headline of all time right there.
Yeah, it could only be more American if you found out the puppy would have survived, but it couldn't afford health insurance.
So, Kristi Noem got fired, and the new head of the Department of Homeland Security is former MMA fighter Mark Wayne Mullen. He's also a senator from Oklahoma at the moment. He'll be taking over DHS. So, okay, nobody should be surprised about Kristi Noem getting fired, but the reasoning is truly insane. She's been presiding over a Gestapo and denying people basic rights and ignoring rulings from federal judges and sending people to torture gulags. But it wasn't that. And it wasn't taking a photo for the gram at a torture gulag while wearing a $50,000 Rolex watch. And it wasn't being in charge of the murderers who murdered Renee Good and Alex Preddy. And it wasn't lying about Good and Preddy immediately after their execution and calling those people domestic terrorists. Apparently, none of that was the problem. Donald Trump decided to draw the line after all that stuff, but before he found out about a cringy ad campaign that she did.
Yeah.
During a congressional hearing last week, Noem got questions about the ad campaign that she ran for DHS, which cost about $220 million, which feels definitely wasteful. That's part of the questioning. And it featured a glammed up cowgirl version of Kristi Noem herself riding a horse and with Mount Rushmore in the background.
Okay. How did none of them understand that nobody survives Trump's orbit yet? Every single one of these assholes are like, nah, I'm going to be the one who doesn't end up in jail on Cameo or both. Yeah.
Good luck, everybody. Keep trying. So here's the real violation, the important one in Trump's head that led to the firing. Noem's responses in that hearing suggested that Trump knew about the ad campaign and approved it ahead of time. And whether or not that's true, that was disloyalty by Noem for saying that. Noem involved Trump in the failures of his own administration, and she got fired within a day. That's how it works here. And it didn't help that Trump was very clearly extremely jealous about not starring in that commercial himself and being on the horsey with the cool Rushmore background.
Yeah, yeah. He wanted to star as the guy on the horse and also as the guy on the mountain as well. Yeah.
He was mad he wasn't in the background at minimum on that mountain. So there was one other big factor in Noem's firing. Well, at least according to the New York Post. So not the greatest journalism squad over there. Keep that in mind. And also, this part doesn't really matter because it's about who Kristi Noem was having sex with. Consensual adult sex, as far as we know, rather than about the content of being a neo-Nazi leader, which is what that should be about.
I don't think you can consent to having sex with Kristi Noem. I'm sorry. This is just philosophically. Okay. I'm just don't feel comfortable philosophically being like, yeah, no, fully sentient people are like yummers. I just want to put the word out there. I know.
We're going to land on Corey Lewandowski, just so you know. But again, just keep in mind.
Okay, so not fully sentient necessarily.
That's what I'm saying.
Not fully sentient. New York, a lot of disclaimers here at the beginning.
You could fix this puzzle for us, Ethan Wright.
What's that?
Super genius utilitarian philosopher Peter Singer.
All right.
If you weren't always besmirching
Eli's
his name.
Audio went out. I don't know what happened.
He didn't come on.
He's
the
gone
show.
For the rest of the episode. Is that what you?
Ooh, wait. So you know how we can't do too much bad stuff around Marsh because he has a real grown-up life. I feel like bringing Peter Singer on the show is exactly the line of what we're allowed to do to Marsh.
I mean, I'll have talked to weirder people. Come on, let's face it.
Exactly, that's the thing.
I mean, you're one of them, at least.
Exactly, it's an external be reasonable
episode. It'd be fun to find out like how far before the mms turned into like a side tackle, though. Yeah.
Before we all start getting Facebook messages on our phone. Off now. Delete Zencaster.
Okay, so here's the deal with the New York Post's theory on this. They're claiming to have a source within the administration who said the final straw for Trump was Kristi Noem having an affair with a subordinate at DHS. That would be DHS advisor Corey Lewandowski. That's been a rumor for a while, but during another hearing last week, Noem got asked very directly, have you had sexual relations with Corey Lewandowski? And Noam responded, exact words, I am shocked that we're going down and peddling tabloid garbage in this committee today. He is a special government employee who works for the White House. There are thousands of them in the federal government, end quote, that had no yeses or nos.
Thousands. Wow. Way to make your boy feel special, Christy. Jesus.
Yeah. And that was such a crazy non-answer, full of complete nonsense, extra details. Such an obvious lie. So Noam kept getting pressed on the same question a few more times, including, hey, let's make it simple. Sex with Corey, yes or no? Just say yes or no. And she responded with like more noises that kind of came close to like, yarns. She never said yes or no, though. She kept going with avoiding this. And then Representative Jared Moskowitz, Democrat of Florida, finally was like, I really think you need to say the word no into the record so that you can clear that up. And Noam continued never saying yes or no. And now Christy and Corey both fired.
Yeah. Look, I mean, you're right. Their sex lives literally don't matter. That's not the reason they're awful human beings. But I do have to say, given that he's sleeping with Christy Noam, we now 100% know that Lewandowski is into outfit stuff. He's got to be into outfit stuff. That's got to be what it is.
And he's a big fan of Resident Evil. Probably.
Yeah, I think that much is very clear. Yes. So either accidentally or on purpose, that was a pretty good sketch. So Christy, Corey, if you need some work, I know you do. And if your resume has too much neo-Nazi fascism stuff... Well, honestly, that's weird because you could apply to so many places where that would help both of you. But also, we might have something for you here on the podcast. And it's not a prank. It's not. It's real and serious. Contact us. See what happens.
How would she know at this point? What could we possibly do that she'd be like, wait a second, this is weirder than my previous job. This must be a prank.
We would have to like try hard to expose our prank on purpose eventually. Yeah, whatever it was.
And in green...
But it's not a prank. I want to be clear. I was serious about that. I don't know why I said prank after that.
And in green shoots news... Things aren't going well here for Keir Starmer, and he's currently sitting on an approval rating of minus 49, which is below the approval ratings of Theresa May, Boris Johnson, and Rishi Sunak at any point during their tenure, like worse than they ever were. Starmer has even beaten the minus 47 achieved by Liz Truss in her brief but bright explosion of a prime ministerial stint.
Okay, genuinely, I was on Polymarket just like looking stuff up for that story. Keir Starmer out by was on the very first page as a suggestion.
Yeah.
And it's got like April 1st as one of the dates. Yep.
Okay, but to be fair, if you scroll down, they also have an option for out as his drag persona Special K, and I'm really hoping for that for him.
Now, admittedly, like part of the reason Starmer is so universally disliked is that there is a very well-funded, highly coordinated media machine dedicated to telling everyone how useless he is at all times and how disliked he is. That's from the right-wing newspapers and the even further right-wing magazines, all the way to Telegram and Twitter amplifying false claims that the UK has fallen and is now completely overrun with migrants.
Okay, well, it's nice that your Nazis over there say migrants instead of the words that are used here. Otherwise, that was, you were just describing the same. We have all that, too. I think we exported it to you.
But the thing is, a huge part of the rest of Starmer's low polling is a result of his absolutely genius tactic of trying to head off Nigel Farage's Reform Party by adopting the kind of policies and rhetoric Nigel Farage's Reform Party would approve of. Step three, electoral profit, I guess.
Okay, it's like Eminem in 8 Mile going first in that rap battle and roasting himself. Is it like that? Yeah. Is that how?
Yeah, and the thing is, obviously, when you do that, he's just literally giving Nigel Farage what he wants and then allowing Farage to make even more bold demands while pissing off anyone who might actually have wanted to vote for a Labour Party that wants to do broadly left of centre Labour Party things. And so against all of that backdrop, the by-election of Gorton and Denton in Greater Manchester was seen as a very crucial fight to see which party would claim the seat that was being vacated by Labour's Andrew Gwynn, who was having to resign due to ill health.
I never thought I'd long for an ever-changing representative house run by 89 parties, but here we are, Marsh. Marry me. Marry me.
Now, all of the talk was that this was a major opportunity for Reform to claim that seat. With their candidate, Matt Goodwin, who's a former academic turned GB news presenter and anti-woke commentator. Goodwin has made headlines in the past complaining about how an invasion of mass uncontrolled immigration has led to events like the 2025 Cambridgeshire train stabbing, where people got stabbed on a train in Cambridgeshire. And when people pointed out that the suspect in that case was a black guy called Anthony Williams who was born in the UK, Goodwin responded, "It takes more than a piece of paper to make somebody British." What that did, that did get him political endorsement from Tommy Robinson, but made him a really surprising choice to be a candidate for a region where 30% of the constituency are Muslim.
Yeah, that does sound weird, but I'd be careful based on, you know, results around here recently. I'd be careful about assuming any particular group is going to vote against the bigot, or any single person is going to vote against the bigot. Yeah. We all apparently contain multitudes, including our shared love of shared hate, and it's not going to play out the way you expect. We just do a lot of bigot stuff. That's humanity.
Marsha, I think you might agree that Down With Us is the most popular platform of the last decade. It's done well across the board.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, actually, on the subject of that, because that wasn't the only racism scandal around Reform in this by-election, because it turns out Matt Goodwin's campaign manager, Adam Michula, was sacked after some of his social media posts came to light. And Michula himself is a Polish-born immigrant, but he posted that he would, quote, never touch a Jewish woman, and that he thought the Holocaust was exaggerated whilst likening trans people to paedophiles. And, like, I get it. I get the bind.
Exaggerated?
Yeah.
Like the Jewish conspiracy was, like, you know, gilding that lily a little bit?
Yeah,
called
like
the Holocaust?
4.5 million, but they're rounding up. And guys. Yeah, it's that kind of thing, I imagine, yeah.
Hiss, creaky paw.
And, like, he's Polish-born as well. He's from Poland. Anyway, like, I get the bind that Michula found himself in, because thinking those things is practically a prerequisite for a position in Reform, but saying them out loud is a resigning matter.
Oh, man, we used to have the quiet part in America, too. That was remember cool. When we had that? Do you remember?
Mary Heath, too.
It was a while.
So given all of that and how genuinely unlikable Matt Goodwin is, it might not be that big of a shock that last week Reform did not win this by-election. They came second with 29% of the vote. They were beaten by Hannah Spencer of the Green Party, who got 40% of the vote. And then Labour came in third with 25% of the vote. And the Tories got 1.9% of the vote, meaning that for the first time since 1962, a Tory candidate lost their election deposit.
Okay, now they're worried, guys. Money is like their favorite thing, okay?
So you have to get over like 2% or something
5%.
To get your deposit back. Yeah. 5% gets you the deposit back. And then
Not do that. I think they only just beat Sir Oinks-a-Lot, the joke candidate who got like not that many fewer votes than the Tory candidate. Yeah, it's amazing. So the Greens are genuinely on the rise at the moment. They're under Democratic Socialist Zach Polanski. So this was actually their first ever by-election win in the history of the party, I believe. And that's not to say that Reform were disappointed to come second, with one senior Reform figure explaining, quote, "We wanted to galvanise the working class vote, and we got that. So it was reasonable to run a right-wing candidate. We came second, not third, which was a definite win," unquote.
Okay. I say that all the time. Yeah, no, it's interesting polycule math. Whatever.
Silver actually goes with way more outfits than gold. I'm going to look so amazing on that podium. I honestly feel bad.
And even that's ridiculous. This whole thing about galvanizing the working class. You ran an academic from the South called Matt Goodwin, and you were beaten by a plumber. Like, Hannah is a plumber, the candidate who won. Like, you're pretty working class when Hannah Spencer, the plumber, beats you. But yeah,
I don't
anyways.
Understand. That's a lady name.
This obvious lie couldn't hold for long. And soon the party had actually figured out what really was to blame here. And the answer was those pesky Muslims who were voting as a bloc. Nigel Farage made the claim that Reform had actually won among British-born voters, which, you know, was the real quiz. But even that is obvious bollocks, because voting takes place in secret. You can't know who voted for which party. So that's just a lie that he's made up.
Oh, that was just a racist guess that he threw out. Okay, cool.
And so Farage's latest line is that this was a victory for cheating because of reports of so-called family voting, where family members enter the voting booth together and then, you know, apparently influence each other's voting intentions. Now, obviously, he's got particular families in mind when he makes that accusation. But
sounds
again,
like it, yeah.
Even if that was true, it would have to mean that lots of those Muslim voters were just about to vote for the candidate that called them an invading force destroying the country until their husband stepped in and coerced them into a vote for Labour or the Greens.
Voting for the Greens, yeah, exactly. Well, good thing the Muslim women of the UK have a champion of their rights in Nigel Farage.
Yeah, exactly.
It's good for them to know.
Nope.
Sure, they're feeling good.
Farage's claim on all of this stems from a report by a group called Democracy Volunteers, who said that they'd visited 22 polling stations on the day and they'd witnessed 32 cases of family voting, which they claim affected, therefore, 12% of total votes for the seat. Though Manchester City Council say they saw nothing of the sort. And if you ask me, what Democracy Volunteers are describing as family voting would also include instances where somebody helps an elderly or disabled relative into the voting booth. That would be the kind of thing they're reporting there. Plus, Democracy Volunteers never said anything about any of this to any authority while the voting was happening.
Well, that's weird.
Yeah, it's what they'd be expected to do if they saw fraud rather than waiting to see the result first and then complaining afterwards. Also, literally nobody has ever heard of Democracy Volunteers before this happened. Literally nobody.
Oh, you're getting your own British Mike Lindell. Congratulations. Yeah, that's awesome for you.
Also, I know
it's a fun time.
Also, I know I'm not the math guy on the podcast, but if 32 cases of family voting is 12% of votes, that means they watched 800 instances of voting across 22 stations. That they stayed for 36 instances of voting.
Yep.
Did they do this survey on their lunch break? That they had a 15 instead of a 30 because they came late.
Yeah, I get the sense it's not so much Democracy Volunteers as Democracy Volunteer, and it's one guy going around like himself. I don't know.
All right, time for the next one, and it's close enough to 50. What am I, the Jews estimating the Holocaust? Go on, eh? Off I go.
Now, all of this just
smacks. I'm called Democracy Volunteers. I am.
Great Manchester accent, as always, Eli. Absolutely not perfect.
Thank you.
All of this smacks of desperation from Farage, because he thought they were a shoe-in with their, you know, famous, but also famously racist candidate. And then they saw the Greens take a chunk out of Reform's polling numbers. Meanwhile, 64% of the public now say they personally dislike Nigel Farage. So the lesson here should be really clear to Labour as they watch a left-wing candidate storm to victory on a message of economic fairness and environmental justice, which is why the Labour Home Secretary, Shaban Mahmood, has said what the party really needs to do is to be even tougher on immigration. Somebody fucking shoot me, please.
They're going to come here with their families and all vote at the same time, damn it. And finally tonight in I'm Gonna Get You, Soccer News... The city of
so stupid.
No one near.
The city of Osaka.
There
Japan,
it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Crushed it.
Has been desperately searching for a way to repair its aging water pipe infrastructure for years. Like many cities in Japan, Osaka's water pipes were built during the rapid post-war economic growth and have caused the area no end of problems in recent years.
Right, plus there was that period where they were constantly getting destroyed by kaiju for like a decade or so, and that really messed the municipal infrastructure maintenance budget.
Huge amount. So Osaka
gotta
had...
build the wall again. Fuck.
Osaka.
We gotta
had...
charge the kaijus for.
We gotta start sending the bill to Godzilla. So Osaka had 92 cases of water pipe leaks under city roads in 2025, and concern over the safety of Osaka's waterworks system grew after a massive sinkhole swallowed a truck and killed the driver last year. Well, luckily, last week, an anonymous donor gave the city $3.6 million worth of gold bars to fix it. So we're going to talk about it.
Okay. I guess that's nice because it's, you know, giving money theoretically to a public works project that's important, but it's a dick move to not sell the gold and then just give them money, right? So, like, very clearly some kind of crime being hidden.
Oh,
like,
somebody has illegal
hot gold and is very clearly trying to, like, launder it with this donation, right?
Yeah, it certainly seems like a guilty move. Yeah, absolutely.
How dare you? How dare you?
Like, the only way this could be more inconvenient is if it was $3.5 million, but in a lot of very small gold bars, like the gilt equivalent of paying a fine in pennies.
Yeah.
Just in Goldschlager amounts.
Yes, exactly. Right. So the 560 million yen worth of gold weighed in at 46 pounds, or 21 kilograms if you're nasty. It was given to Osaka City Waterworks Bureau in November by the donor who wants to help improve the aging water pipes. But the mayor only informed reporters about the donation this week. I assume because the city has spent the last 3 months asking ChatGPT, and you're sure nobody ever stole a bunch of gold bars in Japan. Use web search. Turn web search on, man.
Can we fix water pipes with, I don't know, crown jewels from the Louvre, say, as an example? Use private window for that.
And I think using a private window is how those thieves stole from the Louvre, actually.
Yeah, exactly. It's all working out.
They did.
But whatever happened, I guess those Googles went unresponded. And so now the city will be moving forward with the project. Which brings me to a project of my own. Gentlemen, if you don't mind, you never know who's listening to your podcast. So if you, podcast listener, have $3.6 million in gold bars you'd like to donate anonymously to our show, we are willing to accept it. Just let us know how and when to pick them up, and we'll really be able to up our prank website game in 2026. I'm talking full UI, people. Think of the possibilities.
And on that note, seriously, give us your illegal gold. That sounds great. On that note, we're going to close it
out. Crime. Marsh isn't included in that. He's just visiting.
No, just give it to me and Eli. Thanks to Michael Marshall. Thanks to Eli Bosnick. And thanks to all the listeners who liked us and followed us on all the various internets. Please keep doing that. Please keep listening and please keep telling your friends. And if you find the naive stupidity of our giving away a free show business model to be oddly charming, you can send us gifts of money at patreon.com/skeptocrat. Just like all the generous new donors, you will be complimented next time around. And whether or not you're feeling financially benevolent like those fine people, if you enjoyed our brand of whimsy and you'd like to hear more dick jokes free of charge, check out our brother and sister shows, The Scathing Atheist, God Awful Movies, D&D Minus, and Citation Needed, available in all the podcast places. We just have one last thing. Let's compliment that penist. Special thanks to Ryan Zlonick of Evil Giraffes on Mars. He's the creator of the virtuosic musical stylings you heard today, which were used with permission. You should definitely check him out using the links we'll provide or by Googling the only band called Evil Giraffes on Mars. Until next time, catchphrase sign off. The preceding podcast was a production of Puzzle and a Thunderstorm, LLC. Copyright 2026. All rights reserved.